Good evening. Welcome to Messages from the Midrash for Parshat Yitro. Looking at this handout, it's from last week, B'Shalach, but this week we are in Parshat Yitro, a very also important, in as much as every Parshat is important, very important Parsha, in which we receive the Torah, we turn into a nation that's bound in a covenant with Hashem following the Torah. So we'll look at some Midrashim. I'll acknowledge the yard site of Reb Schoenhout, and that's Ned Brody's uncle, Julius Schoenhout, Yehuda ben Yaakov, and Shama have and Eliad. Last night we had Carol's, last night today was Carol's mother's yard site. Carol, what was her name? I don't know if you're able to unmute. Name wasn't included in the handout. Where Neshama should have Analia as well. And so we'll look at three Midrashim. One about Yitro and his contributions. One will be about the Sina Matan Torah. There's actually not a lot in Tanhuma about particular Dibrot. So we're not going to talk much about the Dibrot, but then we'll talk about the last Midrash will relate to one of the mitzvot post Aseret Hadibrot, and I think it has some important tie-ins with current events. So let's start with the second, with Siman Bet, with the second Siman in Midrash Tanhuma. Get this spotlight going. Okay. So Vishma Yitro, Yitro hurts. There's actually a number of Midrashim here that talk about what Yitro heard, or the significance of Yitro hearing. The pshat in the pasuk is that Yitro heard everything that Hashem did for Bnei Yisrael. Rashi enumerates a number of these things: Kriyat Yamsuf, Yitzya Mitzrayim, Kriyat Yamsuf, or with Amalek. The man had already fallen at this point. So Yitro's heard what Hashem has done for Bnei Yisrael. So Midrash says, Yesh Shama v'hipsid. There are some people who hear and lose, meaning that they lose a reward, that their hearing leads to something that's destructive, negative, and the like. The Yesh Shama v'niskar. There's some who hear and are rewarded. So first we'll get the example of one who was Shama v'hipsid, somebody who heard and lost. Yo Shama v'hipsid, shenemar Ashama ha-melech aleihem. The king, Yoash, was one of the kings of Yehuda. Interestingly, he starts as a good king. He becomes a king at a very young age. And he is, at the beginning, a very good king, but then things turn a little bit. This is documented in Malachim. It's documented in Divrei Hayamim Bet. So the context here, yeah, is that Yoash starts off strong, but he was particularly influenced by a Kohen named Yehoyada. After Yehoyada passes away, Yoash becomes influenced by others. And it says, Asha Mahamelech Alehem, he begins to listen to other advisors who brought him in the direction of Avodah Zarah. And this is the constant conflict in Malachim, and for that matter, Divrei Hayamim, that you have kings who follow what Hashem says, and there are other kings who go after Avodah Zarah, either enable Avodah Zarah, they themselves are engaged in Avodah Zarah. So Yoash starts positively, but then he follows the advice of others and goes after Avodah Zarah. The fichach, but Yoash asu shvatim. Therefore, they executed judgment upon Yoash. Things don't end well for him because he went after Avodah Zarah. Ava Yitro shama v'niskar. Yitro listened. When he heard and he listened, he was rewarded. Shaya Komer Levodah Zarah, he had been an idolatrous priest. Rashi explains that he went after every type of Avodah Zarah. We'll come back to that in a second. Uva v'nidbak l'Moshe. And then he comes and he clings to Moshe. V'nichnas tacha kanfei Hashchina, he converts. And there's a pasuk within the first Aliyah that says Vayichad Yitro, that Yitro was happy about everything that Hashem heard. Midrash Tanhuma later says Vayichad Yitro. The chet could be interpreted as a hey, that Vayichad Yitro, that Yitro became a Yehudi. some ways it's kind of a difficult shot because they weren't called Jews at the time of at this time. They were Bnei Israel. Yehudis, Yehuda is one tribe. So the concept is there that Yitro became part of the tribe. Bezacha liyatzer parsha d'dayin liYisrael. So Yitro, Rashi says, had seven different, I think it's also in Tanchuma, actually, that Yitro had seven different names. And one of them is Yeter. And why is that? Because an extra parsha was added to the Torah because of him. And that is something that is seen as a merit. An extra parsha is added in terms of Moshe setting up the hierarchy for the judicial system. So before we go any further, because then it's going to go into the judicial things, which is also interesting. But I think this idea is very powerful of what it means to hear, that we can hear things and we can lose out, or we can hear things and that we can gain, we can be rewarded. In life, we hear a lot of things, especially these days. There's so much noise out there. There's so much put out there on the internet and the news. We hear many different things. We hear all sorts of ideas. And it's our choice and our responsibility to figure out if we're going to listen to the Sheker, if we're going to listen to the Emet, are we going to listen to the truth, or we're going to listen to the falsehoods? We're going to listen to well-evidenced claims, or we're going to listen to conspiracies?
See, it seems like Yoash and Yitro were the mirror opposites of each other.
Right. Yitro leaves Avodah Zarah to become a Yehudi. Yoash goes after Avodah Zarah. That is definitely true, right? So you have that sort of that flip, that status change. But that becomes our choice and our responsibility. That's sort of what's being emphasized here, is that we shouldn't under. And hearing is something that's kind of, you know, it's not tangible. It's not something you touch and whatnot. It's a very passive thing. You think, right? We hear all sorts of things, right? Whether we choose to or not. You could say that about saying also, but noise, if it's there, it's there. You know, you hear it, but it's our choice to figure out what to pay attention to. Right? And sometimes it's a matter of having proper criteria for it, what we listen to, right? So, of course, people all the time attack the media, right? Whether it's on the right, whether it's left, fake news, alternative facts. So it matters, of course, you know, obviously some of it's right, but we have to choose which is the things that we're going to listen to. Again, based on credibility, expertise. I talked on Shabbat Shuvah a year and a half ago about how during the pandemic, I guess you still have a lot of this today, that you have like a lot of people, especially on social media, call Instagram influencers who, you know, they have a big platform. They have, you know, a million something followers. They're a famous cook or chef or celebrity of some sort. Now they have this big platform and they can spread lots of things. So sometimes they use their platform for good, right? Some influencers have used their platform to spread word about Agunot and to try to help women who are sadly chained to their marriages, who are seeking divorce. And sometimes people use that to spread misinformation, to talk about things that they have no expertise in. It's a very fine line. There's a Sefer Lev Eliyahu that talks about how Yitro hayab bo mida yudola shel bakasha ta'amet, that he had the great trait of seeking the truth, right? The fact that he tried all sorts of avodah zarahs and he never was satisfied with one of them, because he could say, wow, like he was, you know, how terrible that he just went after all of them. But at the same time, maybe you could see it in that the fact that he actually never really felt like any of them was right. So he kept going until he finally came to Hashem and realized the truth. And that's, you know, when we think about sort of what we listen to, what we hear, we have to be seeking the truth.
I like to say in modern vernacular, he took a course in comparative religions.
Right, exactly. Right, so when we look at the Yosh example, so he's the one who started good, started on a good path, but it seems like he was influenced by his desire for popularity, which means he didn't have much of a spine. He was looking for political gain. So that's another thing to think about is do we listen to what we want to hear in order to gain popularity? It's also something to be careful about. But then there's also this question of sort of what are our values and how does that affect what we hear? So that's, you know, something that's sort of within our control, is our ability to be aware and reflective of our values and how that influences what choices we want to make. And again, that comes a lot from just ideas that we hear and what we choose to filter and et cetera. So the Midrash continues, you're going to look throughout. So Yitro comes to Moshe. Moshe is standing all day long, listening to people's issues, listening to issues of conflict. And Yitro says, you can't do this. You're going to burn out if you spend all day shouldering all this responsibility. You need to divvy it up. So you have to look throughout the nation, and you need to look for, there's four criteria, Anshe Chayil, Yirei Elokim, Anshe Emet, and Sonei Vatza. So these four different criteria. So interesting to compare this with what Rashi says. I think Rashi gets this from the Mechilta. So what does it mean to be an Ish Chayil? So Rashi says that Anshe Chayil are people who are rich, Ashirim. So why should religious leadership be contingent upon somebody's wealth? And so it's because they're not going to be bribed. They don't need the money. I mean, sometimes people who are rich want more and more money. But in theory, somebody who has an income and doesn't need to be flattered. They don't need somebody else's help. So they'll get the right judgment. But here the Midrash says that Anshe Chayil are giborim b'Torah, heroes of Torah. People who are heroic with strength fulfill Hashem's word, right? Which tells us that being a Torah observant Jew is a very heroic thing. Something that was more obvious in some ways decades ago, when you had to make the choice between working on Shabbos just to make ends meet versus not working on Shabbos. So those who did not work on Shabbos were certainly heroic, but no matter what. Following Tariyak Mitzvah is not something that's easy, and get tired inertia. It takes a lot of effort to be a Torah observant Jew is a heroic thing, right? That's not just something about a judge, but any person who follows the Torah is a gibor by Torah. So that's one criteria, that they have to be Torah observant. They have to be somebody who is exemplary, who's a model in that. Yirei Elokim kemashma, somebody who's God fearing. That kind of makes sense. I don't think, it doesn't seem like Rashi even comments on that. I don't think. Anshe Emet, people of truth. Omdin Amito Sheldin, people who accept the truth of the halacha, the truth of the Torah. So Rashi says, Elu Balei Avtachos. It's not talking about the law itself or recognizing the truth of the judgment itself, but people who are themselves trustworthy. And you want to judge as somebody judge has to be able to, judge has to decide how to believe other people, but they themselves have to be trustworthy. And you have to have a certain amount of confidence that if they're rendering a judgment, that they're doing so based on truth. And so nevatza, so ne mamon atzman, kol shekein mamon shel acharim. So Midrash says that those who are hate gain, that says gain, but could be bribe, but those are people who hate their own monies and all the more so other money. So for example, even if the person's going to burn down my field, I'm still going to judge them properly, in the sense that maybe they lose that. I guess that if you burn down the judge's field, you're going to lose that lawsuit. But if they're right in this particular lawsuit, if you have a past, you have a past grudge on them, they're going to do the right thing. Rashi says, "Sonei vatas shistonin and mamonam badin," right? That they hate their money and judgment. In a sense, Mar says, "Kol dayana demapki mamonam yine badina lav dayana." Who? That somebody who themselves is involved in a lawsuit, and they're only going to pay. They're only going to pay if they win in court. So a judge has to be lifnim shor tadin, that they are not so obsessed with their money that they're nickeling and diming everything, and that they're going to stiff arm others and the like. There have to be people who are lifnim shor tadin, go beyond the letter of the law. So this is Yitro's contribution in telling Moshe how to bring a proper judicial system into Klal Yisrael for the betterment both of him and the people, and because it's extra parsha, so he's yet there. Okay.
Some commentators are critical of Yitro's advice.
Say more.
You know, that they said, in other words, Moshe in Devarim chapter 1, you know, kind of laments the fact that he had to surrender his authority to these other judges. And, you know, the people were more interested in getting a fast resolution than finding out the truth.
Possible, but I mean, I think the proof that Moshe wins is the fact that within halacha, you have a system of courts, and you have Sanhedrin as a Beit Din HaGadol, and then you have smaller tribunals as well. So you could say maybe for Moshe, maybe it wasn't such a mile, but so be it. Siman Yud talks about the importance of three. So Bnei Yisrael came to Har Sinai. Bechodesh HaShishi, the third month, right? And the third month counting from Nisan is Sivan. They come in the third month. So this whole Midrash goes on paying homage to the number three. So truth is, there are many numbers in Judaism that are significant, two significant and seven significant and eight significant. So it's not saying that necessarily the three is the only positive number. But it's talking about the particular strength and benefits of the number three. So what's the significance of the number three? The Maharal says, if I understand it correctly, the Maharal talks about that when you have, let's say you have two. Let's say you have a group of two. So if you make a line, so there's two endpoints, right? There's beginning, there's an end. Let's say you make a triangle. So a triangle is connected at all points, right? It doesn't go off the edge, right? Triangle is connected in all three points. So that sort of shows the strength of that, you know, the bond between those three points. They're not finite. We also have the value of chazaka that three times in terms of quantity shows the strength of something. So if you do something three times, it shows that there's a commitment, that there's a strength. So Maharal talks about number three showing endurance. And again, two is also, it's not to say that two is a bad number. Two is also significant. Elsewhere in the Parsha, let's say we have Zachor and Shamor, we have all these different things where you have two things in the Torah, and they're both significant. They both teach different things. But the truth is, so let's say you have, talk about parents. So, right. So, okay. So we don't have couples of three, right? No such thing. Right? There's a man and a woman. But even then, there's actually a third partner. It's a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So the strength of a parenthood is not just through the father and mother, but it's also through HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So get three there also. Something I was thinking about. So Bechodesh HaShishi came the third month. Have I not written to you excellent things? Shilshom. Shalashim b'moetzot v'dad. Counsels and knowledge. Amar Rabbi Yeshua b'Rabbi Nechemya. Zot Torah shal tiyatav meshulashim. This is the Torah whose letters are in groups of three. So you have Aleph, Bet, Gimel. So this is fascinating. So first of all, you might say there's 22 Hebrew letters. There's actually 27 if you include the Sophia. 27 is a multiple of three. Not only that, but the Gematriot, if you add up Aleph, Bet, Gimel, 1, 2, and 3, that gets you 6. Dalet, Hey, Vav, that's also a multiple of three. So I didn't try all the different iterations of it, but I think Tet, Yud, and Kaf also. Tet, Yud, and Kaf is 20 plus 10 is 39, right? Divided into three. So I didn't test all of them, but something there. I call it Mishulash, right? Everything is in groups of three. Tara Mishulash, Tarnavik, Tuvin. Mishnah, Mishulash, Talmud, Halakha, Bagoda. The concept of Torah Bal Peh. Also, you have the Talmud, the discussion of the laws, and then you have the halakha themselves, and you have the agado, the non-legal parts of it. Asar Sur Meshulash, the agents are three, meaning Miriam, Aaron, Moshe. Tfil Meshulash at Erev, Boker, Tzaraim, Shachar, Tzmin, Chamarev. Dusha Meshulash at Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. Israel has Ganim, Levim, Yisraelim. Moshe has three letters in it. Levi also has three letters in it. Is it Mizera Mishulash and Mitzvah Yaakov? The Abbas say three. The Chodesh Mishulash Nisan Iyar Sivan. Harsin Shatiyatav Mishulashim Shinemar Yechnu Bim Barsin. And 3 days that they prepared for Harsina. Shoshemim Nikdashu Shinemar Yud Nichlonim and Shosh Yamim. Okay, so groups of three are valuable in the Torah. Midrash goes on to say Amar Yeshua Bar Nechemia. The third one is, so it's not just the concept of there being three to begin with, but the third is particularly beloved. I'm not actually quite sure what it is about the third that's inherently beloved. Maybe it's the idea that third, like, it's a charm, that it shows a certain strength, resilience. And maybe it's what we're going back to, the Fazaka. That's the third time that sort of sets it as three. But you got a few different examples that Adam Arishon had three sons, Cain, Havel, and Shade. And Shade is the one who, of course, Shade is Chaviv, Shade is beloved. Shade is the one who is our ancestor. He was born in his image. Even though Yafet was greater, Shem was the one who had the who merited greatness. Again, Avram's descendant of Shem. Shoshabanim La'amra, Miriam Aaron, Moshe. Okay, so Miriam Aaron are great also, but Moshe obviously has his virtue. Shvatim, Reuben, Shimon, and Levi. Reuben, Shimon, and Levi. Levi Chaviv, right? Because Levi is distinct. Deal Hashem and Shevet Halev. Vamlachim, Shal David, Shlomo. Shlomo Chaviv, Shnemar, Veshev, Shlomo, Kiseh, Shem, Lema. Shlomo sat on the throne of Hashem. He also got to build the Beit HaMikdash. And of the months, so if you're in a group, the first 3 months together, Nisan, Iyar, Sivan. So Sivan is the month that we got the Torah, so that is beloved as well. Okay. So then the Midrash goes on to talk about V'lama lo nitna Torah k'sheyatzu mimitzrayim. Why was the Torah not given right away when they left Egypt? Lo kach amar l'moshe b'tziyachad ha'mimitzrayim t'avdun t'elkim al harazet. Supposed to be right after that they leave Mitzrayim that they're going to serve Hashem. Amar Rabbi Yehuda bar Shalom, Mashal ben Malachim Shaman Mecholim. So let's say you have the son of a king who was sick, and then he begins to recuperate. So Amar Aviv Namtin Lo Shlosha Chadashim Ad Shetavshim Nafsho Minacholim. Obviously, there's a serious illness that you're waiting 3 months, but you wait 3 months until he fully recuperates. Only then will he begin to he'll go back to learning. So, there were those who were injured, so to speak, physically from their labor, but also in the sense of tuma, that they had descended to the 49th level of tuma. So they have to come out of that zone. Wait for them to heal, and then I'll give them the Torah. It's a very powerful sense that, remember where I saw this, but and in theory, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have, whatever healing he had to do, he could have done right away. Okay, so again, so maybe if it's too much, it still takes time, but that's also the point, that things that are important take time. There's no room for instant gratification, even in Torah, even when Hashem has the ability to enact that. There's no room for that sort of instant gratification, but the time that it takes to develop an ability at something, the time that it takes to be prepared for something, so that nothing really replaces time in that sense. And sometimes we just need to give it time before we are truly ready. Okay. I want to go straight to the last midrash that immediately struck me as being relevant to current events. So at the end of the parsha, let me actually pull up. Sure. Always forget that sometimes the midrash on the paper doesn't have a pasuk, but it's always good to cite the pasuk and not rely on memory. This is Kaf Gimel. So it says in Kaf, Bad Bin Imus Bach, Amanim Tasa, Lilo Tibnatam Gazit. You will not make an altar of stones for me, or when you make an altar of stones, rather, do not build them hewn, lest you wave your sword over and defile it. And you shall not ascend with steps upon my altar so that your nakedness will not be covered upon it. So there is importance here attributed to the creation of Mizbeach. So Midrash says, it's a kavachomer. Stones are inanimate objects, and they don't have feelings. No good or bad. So who cares how they're made? So you shouldn't shame it. I think that's also probably referring to partially to not revealing one's nakedness upon the stones. So somebody who is created in Hashem's image, all the more so. Again, something I think that's important always to keep in mind is like when we talk about not embarrassing somebody. So it's easy not to embarrass somebody who doesn't deserve to be embarrassed. I mean, obviously that goes without saying you shouldn't do. But even somebody who deserves, so to speak, embarrassment, so we're still prohibited. It's important to think about. It's hard to remember, but important.
It's a bigger challenge not to embarrass somebody who may be deserving of embarrassment.
It's certainly a bigger challenge and still a mitzvah nonetheless. For if you lift your tool upon it, you have profaned it. Mizbeach was meant to prolong the life of a person by giving korbanos and achieving kapara. The barzel, so let's say you're going to use an iron tool to cut the stones. But iron is used to shorten a person's life. That iron is the sword. You're going to and sword is used to shorten somebody's life. So you can't use a sword or the material of a sword on the Mizbeach because the Mizbeach has been to prolong life. So you don't want any contact there with something that shortens life. Right, and Ramban points out that Barzel is used for a cherev. Cherev is churban. Churban is destruction. That's the opposite of what we want. Right? And I think there's something significant also about stones, rocks, and their role in the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach is meant for a korban, which brings shalom. It's interesting to think back to Yaakov Avinu that he laid his head on a stone to sleep. But Rashi explains that really there are a whole bunch of stones that they all wanted to have the schut of propping up the head of this tzaddik. So they all sort of came together. So initially there was a machloket, but they come together to create shalom for the sake of Yaakov Avinu. Then the Midrash continues, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai Omer, Harehu Omer Avanim Shlemo Tivne. Should build an altar of unhewn stones. It should be whole. It shouldn't be cut. Avanim Shematil and Shalom Ben Yisrael Avim Shabashamayim. Stones that create peace between Ben Yisrael and their father. The stones don't speak and see. They hear, notwithstanding Midrash about Yaakov stones, but real life, obviously, they're inanimate. Ashba tilo shalom, and nonetheless, they bring together shalom. Amra Torah lo tanif alein barza. You should not bring iron upon them. Hamatil shalom bin adam chaveru ben ish leishal acha kama kama sheyarich yamav shnota. So all the more so, somebody who brings peace between a husband and wife, one person, another person, so they will lengthen their lives. Should be lengthened, right? Gadol hashalom, right? Peace is the greatest thing of all. And this whole Midrash really strikes me as being important this week. That first of all, we're reminded of the fact of that we're not supposed to treat others in a matter of disgrace because they're created in the image of Kadosh Baruch Hu. Yesterday we marked MLK Day. I think at its core, I discussed this in my class. Again, this goes back to discussed in Pirkei Avos here this summer, Chaviv Adam Shenivra B'Tzelem, and says in Pirkei Avos that beloved is a human being who's created in the image of God. Rabbi Michael Rosenzweig has a beautiful article in Tradition about the Torah's view on racism that is rooted And this Mishnah, really, this idea of Tzal Melukim, they're all human beings. And Tiferes Yisrael in that Mishnah says specifically, it doesn't matter if they're Jewish or not Jewish. Everyone has a Tzal Melukim. So I think that's important. Also think to the events on Shabbos when you had, and I'll discuss this in a different capacity on Shabbos, but you had the rabbi and three congregants who were in Shul. It's being live streamed for everybody else to watch. And this gunman came in and held them hostage. And the way he got in was that he was outside. It was a cold day. I guess it was cold in Texas. Didn't know that happened. So it was cold in Texas. And the rabbi told the story that the guy needed some shelter, wanted a cup of tea. So he gives him a cup of tea. So what was the rabbi's motive? He's trying to bring shalom. He's trying to make the synagogue a place of peace, right? If the shuls are equivalent of mizbeach or bimas, a mizbeach. So shul is certainly not the place for evil, for violence, even for verbal altercations. We have to be very careful about that. So of course, notwithstanding the fact that we certainly have to be careful about who we lend to shul, you have practical concerns and you have to be very conscious of security. But this rabbi's motives of trying to be matil shalom bein adam lechaveiro, to try to bring peace between individuals, is something that's noble. And what this individual tried to do was the opposite. Right? He brought the equivalent, our equivalent of a cherev, and guns are also metal. Right. So this evil individual brought weapon into shul dafka, the place that's supposed to be safe from all this. This individual, in addition to the fact that obviously is anti-Semitic, whatever, but evil on all accounts, especially inside a shul. Of course, this whole thing raises the halacha question of bringing guns into shul. I'll give a shiur about that a couple of years ago here. But there's a whole question about bringing weapons into shul. And in fact, there are halachas about not bringing swords into shul from this very midrash that if shul is the equivalent of mizbeach, so wielding a weapon in shul is something very problematic. So the question actually comes up with soldiers at Tahoe, right? So they have to carry guns with them all the time. So can a religious soldier go into Shul Davin Mincha with their gun? So Chuba say that they don't have a choice. They don't have a choice. You have to bring it in. It's dangerous to leave it outside. But that sentiment is there. On the one hand. I support there being armed guards outside shuls if that's a choice that they make, because you don't have a choice. Security has to be extremely important factor. But ideally, shul is supposed to be a place where we keep evil outside, and even for ourselves, bringing weapons is not so pasha, because shul is supposed to be a place for shalom. Shul is supposed to be a place for shalom, for tila. Shul is supposed to lengthen our lives. And that's the focus that we should keep in shul, is that shul is a place of peace and a place of tefillah that we daven for well-beings of our community, all Klal Yisrael, and the entire world. Wishing everyone a wonderful week.
Yashar Koach.
Thank you so much. That was very good.
Thank you, Rabbi. Very